Hey everybody, welcome. We're here to work on our referral kits. This is our referral one pager and case studies. Though we might just focus on the kind of the referral one pager piece of it today. But I do have a bit around the case studies and some things. I've got some material to share around what you want to be doing when you're putting together your referral kits for placement opportunities, as well as a resource that you can use when you're activating your network, when you're connecting with a prospect and you want to give them something to remember you by and to really know who you are and what you do. This is a useful tool for that network activation, as well as before you've got a website, or maybe if you want to position yourself a little differently in a format than LinkedIn might necessarily make it easy for you to do. But it's a great tool to have when somebody says, "Hey, I know somebody. What should we do here?" And you're like, "Well, let me share this and maybe write a little blurb for you to connect us." And that way they know who you are, what you do, what to come to you for, and you can start priming the conversation that you'd have with a potential prospect. One of the reasons that we're specifically doing this training right now, and Melissa here from the placement team is with us for this, is because when we have opportunities for referrals from companies that are coming to CMOX looking for a fractional CMO, we want you to put your best foot forward. And so this training is really around putting all of that together. This is also, of course, a nice kind of capstone. If you're in the sales ready process, this is a nice capstone on that because it kind of takes everything that you're doing in the sales ready process, puts it all together into one kind of cohesive asset that you can present yourself with. Hey, Jared. Hey, Amy. Welcome, welcome. So, let me just get started with raise your hand if you have created a referral kit before, a one pager and case studies before that you want to modify or you want to improve. Just give me a quick show of hands or throw in the chat. You might say just yeah.
You're asking if we have
If
a
you've
one
got one
pager?
already that you want to make better, just let me know. Ashley. If this is Alicia doesn't have one, great. If this is you don't have one, you're like, "I want to make one, starting from scratch," then raise your hand or come off mute and just say yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Sharon, Cindy, Alicia, Jared. Okay, great. So it sounds like most of us here have not made one before. This is kind of we're starting from scratch. No problem. And if you've got one that you want to improve, then that's great too. We can share and workshop. What I want to do today is go through first just a little exercise to get your brain kind of working, and then oh, and Amy, yeah, you've got one, yeah. Oh, and it would be great to show yours. I've seen some of it, I think, and there's some great stuff in there. So what I'd like to spend our time with today is, oh, Casey's coming in. Do a little exercise to get us started, kind of get the juices flowing. Hey, Casey, welcome.
Actually, it's Michael. I'll be
It's
back.
Michael, it's not Casey. Ah, oh, no, it's great to hear your voice though. Oh, and he's gone. And then we'll go through a little material around what makes for a great referral one pager and overall referral kit, and then we'll go through and just like workshop what y'all have. You can work on building this as we go, although I'm going to go through the material kind of quickly, so that we can spend most of our time just going through back and forth. How does that sound, everybody?
That sounds good. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Melissa, I haven't had a chance to meet you. Can you kind of describe what you do?
Yeah, be happy
Great
to. Hi
question.
guys. I've only had the pleasure of meeting what Cindy and if that's Amy Shanefelt, then Amy. So nice to meet all of you. So I have two roles in the organization. So I do a little accelerator enrollment and additionally, oh, that is Amy Shanefelt. Hi, good to see you. And then I also handle all things placement. So anytime there's an opportunity that is knocking on our door, I'm the person that does the intake on it. So we kind of white glove it from both sides. So do the intake, make sure that they're a good qualified lead that we would even want to pass on to you all. And then assess who has got strong alignment, right? This is why we keep a record of your niche. This is why we help you develop your niche and get really clear around it. And then we prep all of your materials and then batch it and send it over to the opportunity. So that's how I handle that process. So I kind of pop in different ways in the organization. And also, let me back up one second, just because I think it's nice. My last name is Abelie. People struggle to pronounce it. So just wanted to say it for everyone who was ever curious. So kind of sounds like I believe, but Abelie. Anyway, so it's nice to connect with everyone. So I'm your point person for any sort of placement opportunities that come in. So that's why I'm sitting shotgun here with Raf today.
And Mel thank you, Melissa. And Melissa might answer questions about kind of specific use cases or what do we see from prospects? What do they tend to want to know? And one of the things that I think could consistently see is that placement opportunities that come to us, and I think you can probably assume this is true for opportunities that you would encounter out in the wild as well, is one of the things that they want to know when they're getting connected to a potential CMO is they want to know, it's like, who's the best person you have in this space? Who's the best person you have in this industry? The best person that you have in this niche? Who really gets our kind of company?
Yeah,
And so
no
your
one
ability.
comes in and says, I want the Jack or Jill of all. They say, I want the expert in my space.
And you might be an expert in multiple spaces, right? But what's the one that you are positioning yourself for right now? Right. And even if you created multiple, if you did the thing we tend to say don't do, which is run in multiple directions at once, even if you created multiple, which one do you think is the most valuable for you? Which one do you think has the most opportunity? Which one do you think you can present yourself the strongest in so that you can really land on that? And that's what we're working on today. So let's get started with a little exercise. Let's imagine, and I'm going to throw this in the chat. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jose. Welcome. Let's imagine that you're in talks with a client. I'm going to call them a client, they're a prospect, but in talks with a client in your ideal niche about working with them as a fractional CMO. They ask to connect with a reference. This happens sometimes, right? Where they say, well, who can we talk to that you've maybe worked with before, who knows you well? And for the sake of this exercise, maybe unrealistic, but for the sake of this exercise, let's just say you can pick anyone in the world, just someone who knows you well and thinks highly of you. I want you to imagine a specific person. Maybe this is your life partner. Maybe this is your business partner. Maybe this is a colleague that you've worked with. Maybe a client that you've worked with in the past, whoever. And when they talk to the client, your reference doesn't need to explain your work history. Like, that's not the thing that they need to say. The client asks them, what about them, meaning you, makes them different than other fractional CMOs? And I want you in the chat, just take a minute or two and write like 1 to 3 sentences. Keep it short, but clear. What does your reference say? That person who knows you well and thinks highly of you, what do they say in answer to this question? What makes them different than other fractional CMOs? I put that prompt in the chat for you to think about, but just I'm going to put like 2 minutes on the timer. And by the end of that 2 minutes, you got to have something in the chat, something that somebody else who knows you well and thinks highly of you would say about you. My timer's not working for some reason, so you get extra time apparently, but
You need me to time it?
no, I got it. It's working now. By the end of the 2 minutes, you got to have something in the chat.
Josh is quick.
I love that speed. That's what I'm looking for, Josh, right? Like, you got to know the answer to this question. Hey, Aaron, welcome. I'm going to put the prompt in the chat again. So the idea here is you got about 2 minutes, or you got about a minute and a half to answer. If you're in talks with an ideal client in your niche, they're asking for a reference. You can pick anyone, someone who knows you well, somebody who thinks highly of you. And they have to answer the question, what about them makes them different than other fractional CMOs? Just write 1 to 3 sentences in the chat. What's their answer? And yeah, Alicia, don't worry about being industry specific yet, right? We're just getting the ball rolling. We're just getting the juices flowing. We'll read these in a moment, but y'all, some of the stuff that you're writing is great. We have 20 seconds left. If you haven't got something in the chat yet, do it. Five seconds. All right, great. Wherever you got, that's where you got. I'm going to read these now. Let's just hear, how do other people see us? Josh helps growth stage AI founders market incredibly capable products that are painfully hard to explain. That's very clear, right? Incredibly capable products that are painfully hard to explain. I really get on a simple level who Josh can help and what he's really good at and why it's valuable to a prospective client. That's very concise and really clear, Josh. I like that a lot. Alishba says she holds you accountable and is transparent. She gets it done. She's not scared to tell it how it is. You said you're thinking of one of your clients in the way that she talks about me, not very industry specific, but that's okay, right? One thing that you might think about for those of you who have sort of the more, maybe it's a little general right now, and these are great seeds, but you might think about, how do they know? Right? What would make them say this? What's something that happened specifically that would make them point to, there's this thing about them that I find really valuable? Where did that come from on a concrete level? We're going to get to why that matters in a moment. But again, we're just getting the ball rolling and planting seeds for things that we might share. Jose says he is amazing at coming up with creative ideas. He's always had a mind for figuring things out by asking questions and developing workflows that help streamline the process. Asking the questions to figure things out, figure out the problems and the solutions, and then streamlining, building those systems. That's great. Amy says she has heart, asks hard questions, works hard to solve your problems. I like there's like, that's a nice little repetition. Heart, hard, hard. That's nice. Jared says he may, oh, this is interesting. Jared makes me feel like the only customer he has a different perspective on every situation. He communicates well and in depth. Makes me feel like the only customer he has. That's fine. There's a little magic in that. He has a different perspective on every situation that I might get curious about, right? I might say it's like, what about the difference is valuable, right? Is that he looks at things in a way that other marketers won't to find solutions that will get missed? Is it something like that? Aaron is a strategic leader. Bold execution gets shit done. Similar kind of question. What would make them say that? And see where, if that starts to help you source, concrete examples of things that make you really valuable. Sharon says Sharon's a valuable resource to any manufacturer. She understands the customer and how to address their needs to show our value. She's dependable and brings in new ideas to help us grow. There is something to be said for dependability. And it's one of those things where, like, you know how if you look at a lot of like marketing unique processes when people are kind of using, here's our unique value proposition or here's our unique process, and it's like, yeah, but everybody does that. It's like some beer did this where they're talking about how they filter the beer, and it's like every beer does that, but they named it, and then it sort of becomes your thing. Dependability is, I think, one of those things that we can easily take for granted, and being able to talk about dependability in concrete ways, you know. What's an example of dependability, of following through, of finishing something and making something happen under stress? Cindy says Cindy has a really good handle on the industry, having been on the marketing side and a co-founder, right? Like, that's a unique position to be in. She understands how the pieces integrate, sees the big picture, as well as understanding the practical and strategic aspects of marketing, and it's a lot of fun to work with. Yeah. What does that fun look like? Ashley knows how to speak to the needs of our clients, and she knows how the work she does helps our team grow. And Aaron's driving for a bit, but listen, great. All right, y'all. Why might it be helpful for us to be able to communicate how others see us as valuable?
Because it helps us identify the things that we can call out also, yeah.
helps us identify the things that we could call out. Yep. Anything else?
It gets us out of our own head, and you're kind of getting a different point of view, so it makes you think differently about yourself.
Getting a different point of view and getting out of your own head. I hear this over and over again. I don't know how to sell myself. I don't know how to market myself. It doesn't feel good. I don't like it. I'm like, cool. Stop being yourself for the day then. Be someone who loves you, who champions your success, who advocates for you. Be that person and use their voice. I'll share a little thing at the end in case you're like, I'm not sure how to do that or I need some help with that. But I just want you to get out of resume mindset right now and get into like advocacy mindset. Like you're not here in what you're doing to try to be like, well, here's all these things I've done. It's how is everything that I'm saying going to make somebody else who wants to, who might want to work with me, who I can help, want to have a conversation with me and remember me. I want you to be compelling and memorable. Those are the two keywords for the day. Even and in what you're working on, like if you get to a point where you're like, I don't know, I feel like I'm tooting my own horn a little too much, or this is a little bit like, is this, I'm trying to make an impression. Is this gimmicky? Is this going to land? It's like, cool, don't worry about it. I'd much rather you do something that I have to go, that's a little too much and we should pull back. But hey, there's something in that that works well. I'd much rather have to have that conversation with you than have to say, this kind of sounds like everybody else. And I don't really know here what I should take away about what makes you unique. And I'll say this, I hate that question. What makes you unique? I'm like, I don't know. Right. But part of the exercise is that, like, let me see myself from somebody else's perspective because I can kind of shake things up. So it's tough. It's important. We got to do it. And this is not about you. This is about you framing the value you create for others in a way that they can hear and receive and remember. Because if they don't remember you, maybe they're ready to have a conversation. Maybe they're not. If they're not ready to have a conversation right now, they got to remember you. I just threw a document in the chat. You can open that up. This is basically kind of an outline around creating the referral kits. I'll share my screen real quick. I'm going to zing through this. If you have questions, stop me. But otherwise, we can kind of take a few minutes at the end before we dig into building referral kits or refining them if you have them already. Just because I want you to get a sense for kind of what is each section for? What are some do's and don'ts? Are y'all ready? Great. All right. So sharing my screen. As I said, compelling and memorable, right? The things that we want here. Can y'all see this? Just wave your fingers at me. Yeah, great. I want them to say two things after they read your referral kit or your website. You can take the things that you do here, you can translate it to a website, you can put it on your LinkedIn profile, whatever. I want to talk to them. I'm going to remember them. And just ask yourself, what would they need to see in order to say those things afterwards? So if your materials are compelling and memorable, they're going to move the prospect into a sales conversation with you, or they'll remember later when they're ready to have one. They'll say, Jose is the person I need to talk to, Sharon's the person I need to talk to. So what do we need to do if we want to be compelling and memorable? It's three things: activate motivation, create recognition, interrupt patterns. This is probably what just about all good marketing needs to do. We need to articulate how you help them achieve and avoid specific measurable outcomes they desire and pain that they fear, right? That's like the polarization of motivation, toward motivation, away from motivation. We have to pepper that throughout everything that you write. We need to create recognition. It's got to be, that's familiar to me, right? That sounds like me. You're talking my language. Say it clearly and simply in language they're already using it in their minds or in their boardrooms, right? In their businesses. And we got to interrupt patterns. This is the contradiction. We've got to say it. It's got to be a familiar thing, but we got to say it differently enough that they think about the situation or about you in a new way. If it sounds like something everybody's saying, 100 other fractional CMOs are saying, you probably need to find a way to say it that sounds like you. And I'll tell you, when I was writing this document, the first thing I wrote was, you got to say it differently. But then it's like, well, how do you do different? Because different changes all the time. So the thing that I want you to think about less than I got to be different is I just got to really be me and say it like I say it, because there's no other Jose in the world. There's no other Sharon in the world or Amy in the world. There's only you. So your unique perspective, your way of seeing it, that is unique and different. Just don't hide it. Don't try to sanitize it and sound like everyone else. Say it how you say it. If you don't know how you say it, go ask other people how you talk and get some reflection there. At least besides, I really like the pattern interrupt because they already have preconceived notions and you can call them out on it and it makes them think exactly the idea of a counterintuitive shift. If you can say, you probably think this, but you might need this, then they go, whoa, ooh, I haven't thought about that. This is arresting. I need to consider this a little different. So everything in your referral kit, the one pager in the case studies, all need to lean into this direction. And I'll say this. When you're doing a placement opportunity with Melissa, you will probably be up with in consideration with two to four or more other fractional CMOs that are being considered for the same position. If you don't sound different, then you kind of disappear. And you should assume that that's true for every other opportunity. It just might not be the same like level of concentration of a placement opportunity where there's active consideration happening, but instead it might be you're giving your placement, your referral kit to a connector and hoping eventually like, hey, this will make an impression and there'll be an opportunity. It's got to be even more particularly memorable. How do we be memorable? We got to be activating motivation, being specific with recognition, and then interrupting those patterns. There's a few notes here about the placement process. The one thing that I want to say is just your referral kit here is really, it's kind of evergreen in the sense that you don't need to create multiple for every opportunity, but we will ask you for it. It's like, hey, what's the most up-to-date version? Just email it along so that we've got it. If you've updated it, Melissa just say most up-to-date copy on here. We've also got a little thing here about the whole executive placement process if you want to learn about that. There's some plenty of things to know about it, but we won't go over that here. All right. Examples. I've got a number of examples from folks in the boardroom that Melissa shared as being particularly effective. There's things about them that are good. You're going to see like a lot of differences, and not everybody does everything in that I'm about to say. But there's things about them that are specific, useful, interesting, that are compelling and memorable. So as you look at these, you can open these as you're writing and working on them, and kind of go, oh, that's what some of these might look like. I'm going to kind of point to some things that I think are useful as we go. You all ready to like kind of get into each piece of it? We talk about the headlines, the problems that you solve, and that sort of thing. I can't see you, so let me make it so that I can see you. All right. I'm assuming
Yes,
heads
let's
were
do it.
nodding. Let's do
Yes,
it.
let's do it.
Excellent.
Let's go.
Let's go. All right. So this is what it looks like generally. Oh, we should view the template. This is generally what it looks like. Never mind. It's gonna be annoying. We're gonna look at Ben's. There's a headline at the top, the problems you solve, the questions to ask me, a bio, testimonials, and then case studies. That's what all of this consists of. So when we get into the headline is simple. It's like your thesis statement. It is the personal declaration that you would create with the Craft Your Offer exercise. I help niche kind of company to achieve outcomes and avoid pain. There might be more that you say, there might be less, it might be a little bit different, but ultimately you're trying to communicate that core motivation, that toward and away from that outcome and that pain, outcome achieved and pain resolved. Assume that if they read this, you got to give them a reason to keep reading. That's going to probably be the first thing that they read. Now, let's just look at a couple, right? Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. Ben says, I help multi-location home services companies turn scattered marketing into a predictable growth engine with clear attribution, lower customer acquisition costs, and a plan to scale into new markets. What I like about this one, obviously, very clear target audience, multi-home location. So, man, I can't talk. Multi-location home services companies. And we're going from one state of being a pain state into a desired outcome state. Scattered marketing, predictable growth engine. He's not leading with how, he's leading with what, right? We want to go from here to here. That's like the sales conversation that you're having. Hey, prospect, are you in scattered marketing? Let's diagnose that and figure that out. Do you want to get into a predictable growth engine? Now we have a gap, and that gap is motivational. Then he talks about, the how, right? There's components of that. We're going to have clear attribution. We're going to have lower customer acquisition costs and a plan to scale into new markets. Now, those are all supplemental. They're supportive, right? But they're not, and that's going to be part of how we get there. But it's not the core. You don't have to do it like that, but just notice how clear that is. Jonathan, similar. I help multi-location healthcare organizations, including chiropractic, dental, and wellness clinics, right? So he's outlining. This is the umbrella, but here's the specific buckets that you might fit into if you're my ideal client. So it makes it really easy for them to self-select. Scale patient acquisition, reduce CAC, and build predictable revenue systems as a fractional CMO. Scaling patient acquisition, that's a toward motivation to reduce CAC, that's reducing a big level of pain. Building predictable revenue systems as a fractional CML. Dawn says, as a fractional CML, now Dawn's a little broader. She's not targeting a specific company, although I would want that, but just notice the language here. As a fractional CMO, I help high growth brands, so not an industry specific, but specific to the like kind of a state that they might self-identify with, scale profitably and dominate their market without bleeding cash on underperforming media and misaligned marketing teams. Bleeding cash, emotional language, right? Clear. She's probably going to go into more detail later, but I just like the cut on that. And then April's here is very different, right? So that's why I'm pointing to this. I would want a little more from April's in terms of who she's targeting. If you're a CEO in B2B, I think healthcare is what April focuses on, I think. If you're a CEO in B2B healthcare who needs more time, more sales, and less stress, let's talk. There's something really disruptive about that. If I'm looking at a bunch of different people, she's still framing it as toward motivations and away from motivations, but there's something about that that's refreshing. Let's take a pause for a moment and just throw in the chat. If you have a personal declaration, throw it in the chat and let's see them. And maybe you've copied your what's it called? Referral kit template. You've opened it. Maybe you're writing it. Hey, Sean, welcome. You're writing in it as we go. Sean, I'll reshare the document that we're working in. And right now, we're just going to see if you've got a personal declaration, just throw it in the chat. And Josh said, this is like Aristotle's trinity of persuasion, ethos, pathos, and logos, credibility, emotion, and logic. And we need all of those, right? We need a good reason to do what we're doing. We need the emotion to move us. We need a reason to justify it to the people we have to go say, hey, I spent this money to do the thing. And we need the credibility. I believe that this is something that will work, right? Because someone else has done. Ashley says, I help women's clinics with underutilized provider capacity improve their consult to care conversion without increasing cost per patient or compromising operational efficiency. There's a lot in there. That's very clear. That's probably not something I would say I would want to necessarily say verbally to someone because it's so information dense, but it's very clear in writing. Underutilized provider capacity is like a condition that it's like, hey, you're probably a good fit for me if this is true. And I'm going to help you get consult to care conversion that's going to increase. We're not going to increase cost per patient. We're not going to compromise operational efficiency. Jose says, I help mid-size animation and VFX studios create high franchise value IP, escaping the vendor trap in 6 to 9 months. Jose, tell me about that.
Yeah, I wrote that before I went through this whole exercise. But yeah, so the trouble that mid-size animation VFX studios are is that they are just hired guns when they actually want to become like the next Pixar. So instead of being hired out as just like a, hey, I need you to animate this one little scene for me, or you know, this scene here or there, they actually want to create stories and characters that'll help them, you know, with they can build on like a Toy Story or you know like a Monsters, Inc. kind of that has repeat value.
That makes sense. As a marketing leader, how do you help them achieve that?
Yeah, so that's the research I've been trying to figure out as well. I know that those are the pain points. The way that you do it in that industry, from what I've researched, is that they make the product, but you help sell the product, right? So as a CMO, you would be in charge of making sure that it gets teased properly, that there's a schedule that you have of how the product gets released into the industry. Also, you create stronger partnership ties, stronger distribution relationships. But yeah, that's as far as I got with that.
Yeah, I think, and we'll just pop back over here to this point, right? The problems that you solve, I feel like outlining that might help as like a kind of the bullets of, if you're in this situation, I can solve this, I can solve that, I can solve that, I can solve that, because that's kind of you saying, here's your buyer journey. And this is how, if you want output at the end, and you're in this situation at the start, I'm going to help you with these things. And that's going to get you from beginning of gap to end of gap. But I think if you right now, I'm not hearing that gap in, I'm hearing the gap at like a high level for them, but not at the marketing level. And I want to know what it is at the marketing level so they can go, I need Jose, as opposed to like a really good, I don't know what comes, I don't know if this is right, comes to mind is like a Kevin Feige who can come in and lead and create a real name for us. It feels a little different to me, but I don't know your space. So I'd be curious how you map that out, and that may be something that you're working on. Let's keep, I'm not going to read everybody's just for time, but just like grabbing a couple. Jared says, I help service companies to build solid marketing systems that remove chaos and help them scale with faster growth, cleaner processes, and long-lasting results. I help service companies to build solid marketing systems. So, Jared, what I would be interested in is how can you make some of these words more concrete so that they're easier triggers in the mind of the prospect? Solid marketing, I'm like, okay, solid is okay. It sounds okay to me, but I'm like, what's better than solid? What does solid do that they don't currently have? What's the answer to that?
Structure.
Structure is like kind of an ancillary benefit, right? Things are structured so that what happens?
So that they can scale with ease.
So scalable marketing systems, right? Over solid marketing, I think is a little more clear and a little more compelling. If they have chaos, how do they know that they have chaos?
Reactionary versus proactive marketing strategies.
Reactionary, maybe, not bad. If it's reactionary, how do they know that it's reactionary? Like, what's the cost of reactionary?
Cost of, that's a great question. Well, I just know that leads come in and then they stop. They're not proactive with their marketing. So what is the cost? Cost some time and money.
So
Don't know how to answer.
inconsistent lead flow, that's way more concrete than chaos, right? Now they might be reactionary. They might be a feeling, and I'm not saying you can't use those words somewhere in here, but when you're saying, hey, I'm going to solve these problems for you, it's like so different to say, I'm going to help you go from inconsistent lead flow to scalable marketing so that you can grow your business with more ease and with more ease, faster, and with long-lasting results. Now, long-lasting results, again, I want you to like paint a clear picture. What would a home ser or a service company say, like, well, where we really want to be is blank. We really want to sell the company in 5 years. We really want to be number one in our market. We really want to have we want to have achieved a certain level of revenue, perhaps. What is the specific thing that makes them go, ah, he's speaking my language?
If I get too specific, am I pigeonholing myself across the board because multiple companies might have different goals?
Great point. And my take is that I think that you being able to say, I can help you do like this or that, like I can help you achieve this goal or that goal, for example, that's one way that you might approach it. I think specific to me, being really specific about something that you're great at is much more interesting and attractive than being vague about it and not letting anybody really know. If you're concerned that it's like, well, everybody might not be working towards that exit, it's like, cool, but what transcends that? It's not, okay, we want to be number one in our market or we want to exit 2 to 5 years. Then what's the way that you can put that in a container that holds kind of both of those, but is more specific and concrete than long-lasting results? And you might have to ask people, you might interview them and be like, well, how do you talk about what you want? And you hear it a few times and then you, oh, let me put it together and try something.
Well, I can also talk to my clients too.
That's a great move.
Cool. Thank you.
And some of the things that I'm asking you all for, I'm not, you might try multiple things and then find something that really works. What I'm really pushing for is more specificity, because that's going to be more memorable than and more compelling than something that you're like, I'm trying to kind of apply to everybody. You don't have to apply to everybody. You got to apply to your right clients. All right, let's keep going. I want to talk about problems that you solve. The key here in this section, when we're looking at the problems that you solve, wait for it. Oh, that's the wrong screen. Let me try again. The problems that you solve, we are talking about the symptoms and the implications of pain that the prospect is in that make you the right fit to help them. So ask yourself, what's creating the gap between where the ideal client is now and where they want to be, either in their business or their life as an entrepreneur or an executive, that they need marketing leadership to solve? Describe those symptoms of their biggest problems, their real world signals that they see, hear, and feel. This is more of what we were just doing. And their implications. These are the risks and the costs of leaving the problem unsolved. In concrete language, be niche specific when possible. Get them in touch with their pain and they start to trust that you've got the solutions because you can articulate their problems clearly. Again, you're mapping out this gap for them. You're telling them in advance. The sales conversation I want to have is that you're in this situation, you've got these problems. I'm going to help you get from here to here. What are those? Inconsistent lead flow. Marketing spend without clear attribution. You're spending money, but you can't tell what's working, right? So there's a pain of like there's a symptom where we have this spend, but there's no attribution. I don't know what I'm spending on. Can't tell what's working, right? And there's a high implication of cost there, which is I'm wasting my money. Agencies on autopilot delivering confusing reports and charging premium fees. Failed experiments on channels that should be working, like Facebook. So there's some story in their mind. This works for other people. It's not working for us. Why? Underutilized CRM and MarTech, no AI. This could be a little better if there was an implication, right? No AI and the cost is whatever it might be. Higher overhead for marketing technicians, slower implementation. No repeatable playbooks for entering new markets. John says unpredictable patient volume across locations. High pain, right? We don't know how to keep volume up across all of our locations. Rising CAC without attribution clarity, similar to what Ben said, right? But said in a different way. Disconnected marketing CRM and follow-up systems. Lead leakage due to slower and consistent speed to lead, poor show-up rates, low conversion quality. Operations that don't scale as fast as acquisitions, founders forced to manage marketing chaos instead of expansion. This is where we're getting into more of that personal for the executive as opposed to just for the business. They're under stress, they're working too much, they have to manage marketing chaos instead of focusing on growth. A couple of things that Don says here. Uncontrolled ad spend, underperforming media buyers. Simple, clear language. The ad spend is uncontrolled. The media buyers are underperforming. No clear path to sustainable, profitable growth. That's a problem you solve. That's a problem every single one of you solves, right? What's your way of communicating that? There's some I like kind of like this. The most CEOs don't have time to figure out marketing. I solve that. It's like you have this problem, I take care of it. She says that over and over. Growth has stalled because trade shows and referrals aren't enough anymore. I fix that. Your sales team is buried in unqualified leads. I fixed that too. Notice the simplicity of this language. You don't have to know a lot about marketing terminology in order to get, yeah, that's a problem. You can write these in the chat or you can come off mute and share. Just what are some of the biggest problems you solve for your specific clients? Maybe this is, and how would your client in your specific niche want to hear that? Because it's what they're already saying. Who's got something? Sharon, you connect marketing with sales. Oh, just to what benefit? What problem is there if they're not connected? And what benefit is there if they are connected?
So if sales is doing one thing and have one message, and they're either not listening to marketing or they're not working together, they're like two separate islands, then you're not getting the correct information to the prospects or customers to reduce that buying cycle. So you need to work together as a team and not two separate islands.
So
So
you make sure that the marketing message is aligned with the like with what's actually getting customers to buy,
yeah,
so
I
that you can
align
reduce the
marketing and
buying cycle.
sales, yeah, to get, yeah, to reduce selling cycle.
Right. So just notice the difference in whether or not I get it and whether or not I care about it between I connect marketing with sales and I make sure marketing is using a message that customers are actually buying so that we can reduce the buying cycle time or whatever, however you say that more cleanly, right? But
Got
it's
it.
like way more clear, way more compelling because there's toward motivation and away from motivation. Customers are actually buying in less time.
Okay.
Cindy said, quick question with the problems solved. Did they have to be solely marketing or can it be marketing tied into ops? Lower return rate. I think it can absolutely be tied into ops if it's related to the work that you do. It's also probably a differentiator because other fractional schools might not be doing that. So being able to articulate it that way, if you've got this problem, I can solve it. It's the biggest thing. Any other examples? Maybe something you want to workshop? What's the biggest problem you solve? And now we're going quick. Ashley says, wrong patient segments clogging the funnel, but I don't want to use the term, the word wrong. So what makes them wrong?
Maybe they're like unprepared. They don't have enough information to kind of make the decision to stick with the service that they called for.
So it's like they're premature, they're like not mark, they're not, I think about it as like they're not sales ready, but that's probably not language that the client is using.
Like maybe it's an like they're misaligned. Like misaligned patient segments.
Misaligned is okay. It's just not, it's vague. It doesn't really tell me what that means. Like I wanna label them more clearly, like they're pre-market or something. So it's like they're not wrong, they're not our buyer yet. I if anybody else has an idea about that kind of language, pop, just throw in the chat. But like to me it's something like they're pre-market or they're I mean at the core of it we're saying they're underqualified and that doesn't make them wrong. It's just you might say shifting from from pre-market or underqualified leads to ready to buy to to targeting leads that are ready to buy. Something like that.
Yeah, sounds better. I think I need to workshop this word a little bit.
Yeah. Jared says I build in marketing internal departments. What Jared, where do you take the department from and where are they when they start and where you take them to?
Usually the companies I work with don't have any internal marketing and they're like, we need to build an internal marketing department. And I'm like, I can help you with that.
Do they have absolutely nobody touching marketing or do they have people in like operations and sales and finance, like all filling in doing various marketing roles that
I
are
think,
like band-aided together?
yeah, great question. Either they're using Google as their main source of marketing, or there's a multiple number of people that are doing different marketing things, and it's not congruent to the growth of the company.
Yeah. So it's like you help build marketing departments where there are no dedicated marketing staff, or there are team like or there are like team members without dedicated marketing experience trying to band-aid the marketing function together, and you build out a dedicated marketing function that What's the benefit there? They're probably working faster. They're working more high quality and more effectively.
Yeah.
Is there any?
They're
Go
going to
ahead.
be more efficient. They're going to have a lot more control over content, campaign strategy, execution, and then proactive marketing.
Proactive, on time, dedicated. The language that Casey likes around this, I like it too, is on time, on budget, world class. Like that's what the department needs to be responsible for. Say that in your, find a way to say that in your own way, but I think that as you're, you're saying this is where they are now, is it's, it's hell, you non-dedicated, non-expert marketers who are not, they're not even marketers, like they're filling in for the marketing role. And you're turning that into this predictable, on time, proactive system to drive growth.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So again, where we keep emphasizing this over and over, is this core piece of it is those first two points around motivation and around recognition is toward motivation, away from motivation, benefit and cost in like everything that you do, everything that you say, and then recognition, trying to say it in the way they're already saying it. The interrupt piece we can play with and find bits for, but let's keep going. The next one that I want to name is questions to ask me. April doesn't actually have this. She's got a different thing, and that's okay. But here's what I like about questions to ask me. And I want to clarify this because some folks ask me, what does this mean? What do I do here? If you could have a prospect ask you any 4 to 5 questions about their current situation or about your experience so that your answers show them the value in working with you, what would they be? So you're seeding the sales conversation in advance. You're articulating the prospect's problems with more nuance and clarity than they can, and you're painting a picture of what's possible. Here's the desirable future. You're implying that you can help them achieve it by asking them this, by having them ask this question of you. So that creates some intrigue, right? It's like, oh, interesting. Something's possible here. Maybe you're also going to point to past experiences that you're like, I want to talk about this. It'd be really cool to talk about this. And the one that I like to use is an example that another member has around her success, which is how did you drive $1 million in revenue from one Instagram post? Well, that has my attention. Now I want to talk to you, right? If that's something relevant for your buyer. This is one of those places where you can really create a lot of intrigue, pattern interrupt, and really kind of get them going, who is this person that they might ask, that they might want to be asked these questions? What might their answers be? And they can also be simple, said in interesting ways. How would you fix marketing attribution so we know exactly where every dollar goes, right? There's pain and there's benefit in that. How have you helped other home services companies scale into new markets? What's the biggest marketing challenge facing home services companies today? Why does Facebook fail for some companies and work so well for others? How do you hold an existing agency accountable without replacing them on day one? They have a conversation with you about these things. If this is your space, they're going to come away with value, right? Regardless of whether they work with you. So there's something desirable in having that conversation with you. How can we increase new patient flow without increasing ad spend? What would it take to unify marketing, CRM, follow-up, and reporting across every location? How can we reduce CAC and increase first month revenue per patient? A lot of this is you're just saying, hey, imagine what you want. How do we get it? And then come and ask me about it. And I'll say this too, you may not just be answering this question in the sales process. You're probably saying, well, help me understand your situation better. Tell me about X, Y, and Z so that you can build even. Right? But these are ways that you can get into really specific, valuable conversations to build gap, motivate action. I think that there was. I love this. How will you take control of the marketing team, enforce accountability, and fix underperformance fast? High implication of value there. And there's an implicit expectation of, oh, if I'm working with Dawn, she's taking over that part of things. I don't have to worry about that anymore. What's your strategy for scaling ad spend profitably, cutting waste, and improving ROAS? With full control, what's the first thing you'd fix in the next 30 days to drive profitability, right? The right clients want to know the answer to that question, and that positions you to have a conversation with them about, well, help me understand, again, where do things stand right now so that I can build more gap, make more compelling offer. All right. What is, we're going to just be really quick on this. I want to hear two ideas. They can be bad ideas. What are two ideas for a question to ask that you want your prospect to ask you in a sales conversation? Who's got one? Uh-oh, my battery's running low. Y'all can hear me? I don't think I can hear you. I'm trying to fix my.
I can hear you.
Okay, great. My computer's having a heart attack, everybody. Melissa, just let me know if you can still hear me because I can't even see if my computer is plugged in.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You can. Thank you. I'm gonna just try to. Oh boy. Sorry, y'all. One sec. Well, if I die, I'm gonna start my I'll open up on my phone, but hopefully this.
Your video is coming back slowly.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a way to see my battery life right now, so sorry, y'all. Getting there. I like, all right, so I still can't see, so in case things die, my computer might die unexpectedly, but I'm just looking at some questions in the chat here. You asked, or you shared, why are you stopping me from using social media ads? There's something in that maybe Alicia is interesting, like what makes you say that using social media is the wrong move for me right now? Or something like that, right? I think that might be where you're going with that.
Yeah,
Is that right?
I find that it's not very strategic. It's just I'm doing it because everybody else is doing it. So I want to highlight that perspective that let's look at an overall strategy instead of just thinking that's the right thing to do and putting money behind something that might be wasting your time and not giving you the results you need.
Yeah. How would I know? So you might maybe reframe the question to, how would I know if running social media ads is actually a waste of my time and money?
Okay, I like that.
Jared says, why do you cost so much? I like this question. It's interesting and it's a little provocative, right? What do you want to get out of that as a question?
What do I want to get out of that?
Like if you're seeding the conversation with prospect, what position do you want the conversation, what direction do you want the conversation to go from there?
Would like to be able to explain the value that I, value over price.
That makes sense. It could be interesting. I don't. It's go ahead.
I had a prospect ask me this question. This was actually the client that closed with me recently. But yeah, he was like, this is a huge investment. Why should I pay you this much? So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think there's a part of me that wants to like consider the frame and how you might sort of focus more on the value piece or something. But there's also something about just being kind of disruptive and putting as one of these questions, why do you cost so much? That's interesting to me, and it to me it speaks of confidence and conviction that you can solve the problem. If you're like, I want you to ask me that.
Yeah,
So that's interesting to me.
I like that.
Yeah, and there's an edge to it that I think is interesting. I don't know, Melissa, what's your take on something like that?
I like it. I like the way that it's provocative a bit because, I mean, as you all well know, over and over again, what you're up against is an agency, an end-to-end agency that founders and CEOs don't exactly understand the value that you bring versus the value that they bring. And so I think it's a kind of a elephant in the room question that if you address it head on and you articulate your value, then you're getting ahead of the question and you're getting ahead of this assessment that they're doing quietly behind the scenes.
Great.
That's cool. Thank you.
I know we're coming up on time here. I have a few more things that I want to share. If you have to drop, catch the recording. If you can stay, awesome, and we'll keep working for a few minutes. 10 minutes is probably all we need to finish up. So thank you all. Jose, you said, how can you make sure US audiences will resonate with RIP? What other avenues exist for us to generate additional revenue in the next 5 years? I think those are interesting and they're clearly like motivated by like there's some toward motivation there. I'd be interested to know like how do those questions change if you can imply risk? If you can say there's this thing that you want, but there's a problem that will keep you from getting there, or there's a cost to failure.
And then and build that into the question.
Yeah, how would that, and maybe it changes, maybe it doesn't, but again, we're just trying to create more tension, more polarity, more, and Cindy, for you, this is similar. How will you optimize spend? How will you go about integrating brand ROI to increase conversion ROI? Like, good questions, valuable. One side of the equation, is there a way to build that tension by making it more, by including the problem as well as the goal, including the pain as well as the goal?
So, from an animation standpoint, it would be that their concern is they need to make up for, they need to find additional ways of creating revenue. Otherwise, they're going to have to shut down or sell. You know what I mean? So, is it what other avenues exist for us to generate additional revenue and avoid having to shut down the studio in the next 5 years? Or is that too dramatic?
I don't think there's too much of a thing as too dramatic. I think it's unlikely you will be too dramatic in the questions. I think you could do that. I think that that's fair. I wonder, I think an alternative would be to say what a thing that's stopping them from finding those audiences now or finding those revenue avenues now and being able to allude to them so that it's like, oh, he already knows about this, but if he's asking, if he wants us to ask about other things, like around, it's sort of, it implies that there's more to the story that you know that they might not know that they want to get in conversation with you. Does that make sense? So like, what's the thing that's stopping the US audience from resonating with the IP? Or why is the IP getting in front of audience that doesn't resonate with it?
Yeah, I think them not understanding the culture, understanding the culture, the characters aren't memorable enough, or the storylines just don't connect with the audiences. So it's around not connecting.
How is
Like
that
it's,
true? What, how is how is how does marketing influence that?
Again, it's through all the teasers. I mean, you can imagine that the reason you want to see a movie is through the trailers, through movie trailers, and how it's cut together. And I mean, sometimes you go to the movie and you're like, well, the trailer was better than the movie. You know what I mean? But my job was done. You know what I mean? I got them to the movies, you know?
Yeah, your situation is interesting. It's unique. I'm not as familiar with it. And again, maybe you don't need to add in the tension piece. I'm just curious what happens if you do. I think that there's something in So there's either maybe this is something to play with, and when as you're working on this, like just like share some examples and we can workshop it in the lab. But maybe there's either resonate with RIP so that blank happens, so that bigger outcome is achieved. That's one idea. The other is resonate, for example, resonate with our with RIP without paying a cost we currently pay to get it.
Say that last part again.
Let's say we can get this outcome right now. We can get them to resonate, but it costs us a lot. There's a time, energy, or money cost to it. How can we get that without paying that cost? But you have to articulate that cost. Something to think about. And if you have an idea now, cool. I'm going to just take a look at a couple
I do not.
others. Sharon says, how does marketing shorten the sales cycle? And so, for example, I'm not saying, Sharon, that you need to do this, but this is a like an example of what I'm talking about here with this tension piece of the toward and away from motivation packed into one question. How does marketing shorten the sales cycle without increasing cost to acquire customers?
Oh,
For
yeah.
example. I'm not saying that's the thing you should use, but if that's not true, if that's not the
Yeah,
direction that you want to
it's
take it,
more,
but
yeah, that's definitely more powerful when it brings it all in there. Okay, yeah.
how does a fractional CMO give more time back to the founder without, for example, without sacrificing brand image or without sacrificing brand voice or something like that, right? Where there's a thing I want, but I don't have it yet because I'm afraid of paying a cost for it. And you can remove that pain for me, so now we can get the thing I want. Aaron says, why wasn't my last RFP accepted? Leads to brand presence, presentation of value over cheapest conversation. Or is Aaron still here? Aaron, are you able to just tell me more about what you mean?
Yeah, so I think the entire, if you didn't have an RFP accepted 100% of the time, it's because you didn't portray the value of the offer, right? So that could come down to, and somebody else was cheaper, right? But you didn't achieve, excuse me, what was necessary to present the value in a way that was compelling, right? And I think it leads to an interesting conversation, especially in an RFP driven industry of marketing really fills that piece of before you even get to the RFP stage, building that value into the prospect's mind so that they already see the value of your offer before you even put forward a price.
Great. Very good. I think that's a good conversation starter place. I don't love the word why as a question word. Generally speaking, you know, Jared's why do you cost so much? Like, there's something provocative about it. It's interesting. My association with why are twofold that why I don't like it, why I don't like why, is because one, I think it tends to, it's vague, it's not directional. It's like, I'm like, I don't know what you're actually asking. Are you talking about the reason something happened? Or are you talking about like how we get to an outcome? There's like usually another question word that I think would be better to make it more clear. The other reason that I don't like it is because it tends to provoke a blame thing trigger in people's minds. So generally I say don't ask why questions to other people. In this case, you could do it because it's a little provocative. Why wasn't my last RFP accepted? I you could also go in a direction of like to create more of that bridging that gap where you might be saying how do I increase my RFP acceptance rate in less time? Or how can you help me increase my RFP acceptance rate faster? Or something like that, that makes a little more like, oh, you're going to get me a thing I want. This is a great direction that y'all are going. I want to share just two more pieces, well, three technically, but the last big one in here are is the bio. And you can take a look at the bios that folks write. But you'll notice, like, Ben kind of talks a lot about his experience and things that he's done that allude to different like really interesting outcomes, right? He's created software that is installed on over 400,000 websites worldwide. Like, ooh, that's interesting. You've got some credibility there. Jonathan similarly led national patient acquisition for healthcare groups with 5 to 100+ locations, 500% integrated. So there's proof points here. That's a piece of what you're writing. There's also, here's what you're not doing is I don't want you to list out your resume. Don't just go in and be like, I have to like explain all the different things that I've done. What I want you to do instead is make an impression around the values that you hold, the perspective that you bring, the experiences, key experiences that have led to some skill or insight that you have, or some outcome that you've created for your clients or for yourself that alludes to the value that you can bring to your clients. This is one of those laws of power thing that Casey talks about. I can't remember which law it is, but it's like say selective truths. This, and this. Dawn starts this off. I don't do fluff. I fix marketing practices, scale businesses, and drive real growth. Right? She's like, I'm not like those other marketing leaders that are doing fluffy marketing that doesn't actually help you. I'm going to do these things. She says, with 17 years in corporate leadership and nearly a decade as a CEO of Digital Dawn, I know what it takes to build profitable, high-performing marketing teams that actually deliver results. She's using these points about her experience to speak to the benefit that the reader wants. So she's not saying, I have 17 years in corporate leadership and a decade as CEO of Digital Dawn, period. It's, I've got these things which lead me to have the thing that you want. You're always connecting those dots. One thing to think about, if you're stuck and you're like, I'm not sure what things I want to really draw from, is highlight significant moments of realization or change. You learned something, or something changed in your situation or your client's situation that you're like, that was for the better. And I want to now highlight it as something that makes me unique so that they understand better about what value I can bring them. Or they go, I want to hear the end of that story. What was that? 400,000 websites? How did you do that? What are you even talking about? What website, what software is that? And you can, of course, include information about your personal life and things if you want, but like frame that from the perspective, you're kind of framing it from the perspective of, I'm the kind of person that you want to work with because of the values alignment, things like that. The last couple of pieces, we're not going to go into that right now because those are a bit longer, but I just to workshop, but I just want to see that. In terms of testimonials and case studies, it's pretty straightforward. You're putting 2 to 3 testimonials on your one pager. Ideally, they're from people who are most like the people who are reading it so that there's the most amount of resonance. They're CEOs, they're founders, et cetera. If you don't have those people, that's okay. Use what you got until you do. In terms of case studies, there's just a couple points that I want to make around this, right? So again, it's the same kind of thing. You want to tell the story of the client that that is most similar to your target audience. If you weren't holding an official fractional CMO role for that client, that's okay. All of your past work informs what you're doing now. So if you did any strategy or leadership, it doesn't matter if your role reflected that, then tell that story. It's your story to tell. And if your success story was outside of your target niche, that's not ideal for the case studies. We'd prefer if there was alignment there. If there's not, then write the case study in a way that you can frame the real problem that you, reader, are experiencing is probably this, and I've solved it in this way. Here's how these problems are the same. There's a little bit of work to do around that, but I think it's necessary so that they get it. They go that you want them to see that resonance, that alignment between their experience and your experience and their current problem. Last thing here is submitting for placement. This is the place to do it. Once you're done, go ahead and submit that for placement here. Send it to me if you want, and I can review it. And the little bonus here is I've got a template reflection request or feedback request. If you're like, I'm not sure how to see myself clearly enough to know what makes me unique and different so that I can really frame it in this one pager or in my marketing materials generally, ask other people for help, people who know you well, right? You might send five colleagues or five friends who get your professional world, because that's important. We want them to understand your professional world. You might send them some version of this request with these kind of questions down here that the feedback that you get might help you go, oh, that's how people see me. Because I'll tell you, when I started doing this and started getting the feedback from folks, and they started saying specific things that it's like, you do this and it's different than other people. I was like, oh, wow, that changes how I can frame the value that I bring. And it also boosted my confidence. And I want that for you. So that's why I threw this exercise in there. You don't have to do it, but it might be helpful. Right, y'all. That's the idea of putting these together. I'm sure you have more work to do. What questions do you have? Who's
I
like,
actually
I
have a
got,
weird,
yeah, Cindy.
I have a weird one. It actually comes from the last thing you said in terms of asking people how they see you. I've done this, something, it was interesting because I've done this in the past and I asked several different people and each one, depending on their frame of view, saw me very differently that I couldn't get consensus. So somebody, let's say, for example, saw me as a brand person. Somebody else saw me as an e-commerce person, the technical side. So it's been really interesting. How do you, when you come across as a chameleon, I guess, and then I don't see myself as such, I just see myself as balanced. So people take what they can. How do you integrate that?
That's a great question.
Because
What's
it's more
most
like I try to
valuable?
just get the problem solved and get shit done. So it doesn't matter to
Yeah.
me. It's like there's a balanced approach.
So I would say there's two ways to think about it. One is the feedback that you get from other people is you get to choose what you accept. And it's like, is that useful for me or not to think about myself this way? So that's the first piece, right? It's like I accept it or I don't. So people are going to see you a certain way, and you might go, oh, that's not how I want to be seen. Delete that and move on. Unless it's something you genuinely are like, oh, that is true and I need to work on it. That's fair. But on the other side of things, it's that like rather than thinking about things as balanced, I want you to try to think about like how do you integrate opposites? So it's like, oh, it's this and that and the other thing. It's like, okay, well, what's the bigger problem that's contained within all of those things that I'm actually doing? So it's not like I'm a brand person, I'm a PPC person, I'm a direct marketing or whatever. Instead, it's like I'm just making this up
I
so
got
that
it.
if it is a better
I think I
word,
have it.
but right, it's like
Yeah.
you're a holistic marketing leader.
Exactly. See the big picture and how the pieces tie together. Holistic view, because I put it like even my own brand is synergy. So in a sense, so it's this holistic view. Thanks. Although
Sharon,
that
how
sounds
about
cliche. Okay.
it, and then it's a question of how do I say that in a way that someone that you can say it as someone else hasn't said this before, which is hard to find, but it might be an interesting exercise. Or how do I say this that's unique to me?
Thanks.
Sharon, any questions from you?
No, I think I just have a lot of work to do. This was the piece I needed to work on next anyway.
Awesome.
So I've decided to take Thursday and Friday off of my day job for two reasons. One, I just need to just stay in bed, get my lungs a little bit more healthier. But also, I was just going to work nonstop on all these things I need to do for this. So this will be one of the things I work on Thursday and Friday, and yeah, I have a few other things. I want to get content for a website and schedule a bunch of, yeah, just all these assignments you guys have been giving me because I show up every day to another meeting and I pay attention, I take notes, and now I got to go back and do all that. But yeah, this has been really good.
Excellent.
It's I read through it once when I was looking at it and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go back to it. But it's just so much easier just sitting in all of these, even though I didn't really do like a lot of work on it as we were going along, but it made me think. So, yeah.
starting to absorb and getting your wheels turning.
Yeah.
So for everybody who's listening, well, let me ask Melissa, and this is to Cindy or Sharon, or to anybody who's listening to this recording later, is there anything that you want to see on the placement side?
One thing that came to mind as I've been listening through this whole thing is a key thing that I deliver, and we cover this, I think, in our sales training process, but one of the things that I make sure to mention to any opportunity that's coming in is that this is not a classic interviewing situation. This is why we don't lead with a resume. This is why we go with this referral kit. I tell them this is a mutual vetting. They are coming to the table to assess you as much as you are assessing them. So if you have that in mind as you're putting these pieces together, I think it allows you the freedom to step into a more powerful mindset versus a let me demonstrate my executive, my CV. Like it's not about that. It's about being compelling. It's about, putting your most outcome-driven self first, versus just dotting the I's and crossing the T's of talking about your work history. So, I think that that's a helpful frame when you're putting all of your materials together. And also, an exercise that I like to do that kind of touches back to one of the things that Raf was saying earlier in this training was when you're thinking about yourself and you're trying to articulate yourself, a lot of times it's easier to label yourself in the third person than it is to say I. It's who is Melissa? What does Melissa do? Who is Cindy? What is the value that Cindy has driven? And when you're able to step into the third person, you're sometimes able to see yourself more easily than when you're in the eye. So maybe that's helpful as you guys go through assembling all of this stuff.
Excellent. One more
Yeah.
thing that I'll add to that first point that you were making, Melissa, around the interview and the mutual vetting. You might think of this as, hey, I don't know if I can help you. I don't know if you're actually, I'm really good at creating this kind of outcome, and I don't know if you're in a position for that to work. So I need to go find out. And that means your business is in a particular situation. You have specific kinds of goals and problems, and you're the kind of person that I want to work with because I care about that, for example. And so when you're coming in, you're a little skeptical and you're like, I got to discover this. And that's useful for you because it helps you decide if they're the right person to work with for you. But it also is useful that to them because that's where you build the gap that they want to cross, and they cross it. The first step of crossing it is saying, great, let's work together. Or let's have a proposal, an agreement review or something, right? Whatever that next step is in the sales process. But if you don't have that, if you don't have that gap, you won't have any, they won't be compelled to take action. And so throughout all of this, as you're putting your referral one pager and case studies together, you're asking yourself that question, what's the gap that they're in? How can I articulate it clearly and allude to the solutions that I have through the questions that I want them to ask? The bio and the experiences that I described, the case study results, the testimonials, all of that. And finally, last thing I'll say for those of you who are doing this now or who are watching this later and are about to go and put your referral kit together, put it together. Give yourself a deadline. Is it in 3 days? Is it at the end of the week? Is it in 2 weeks? If you're still kind of new to the process, whatever it is, give yourself that deadline. Send it to us and then go and share it with like 10 people in your network and just say, hey, I just put this together to help my clients, to help my prospective clients just know better about how I can help them and the problems that I can help them solve. Who are three people that you could send this to who might need to see it, right? So that you can get it out there, distribute, and more people can know that you're a solution so that they can choose to get into a conversation with you so that you can deliver value. All right, y'all. I'll see you in the lab. Send me your stuff when you want reviews on it, and join Casey for Solve Bigger Problems tomorrow. All right. Bye-bye. Good
It's
work.
awesome. Thank you.
Guys.